Welcome to Product Mastery Now, where you learn the seven knowledge areas for product mastery. We teach the product management practices that elevate your influence and create products your customers love as you move towards product mastery. To learn about all seven and assess your strengths in product mastery, go to my website. That's productmasterynow.com. Click the podcast button at the top of the page. I'm Chad McAllister, a product management professor, practitioner, and your host. Now, you've heard about design thinking and maybe even tried it. It's a simple to understand tool for solving problems, developing strategy, and most commonly used by us product professionals for developing a new product or service. And while it's simple to understand, that doesn't mean that it's easy to apply. I've seen design thinking mistakes, and I've made my own as well, no doubt, which limits the results that this powerful tool can really provide for us. Now, when you apply design thinking, wouldn't you like to know you're getting the most from it? That's why Tom Granzo is with us. He has applied design thinking to hundreds of projects and also trained over 1,200 people, that's 1,200 people, to use it properly. And Tom has held senior innovation roles with an emphasis on medical devices and equipment. And now he shares his 35 years of experience and knowledge with others as the founder of Granzo Design Strategies. Also, as a reminder, listeners, we do create a written detailed summary of everything we do talk about, including a one-page action guide that helps you put into action some of the key concepts that will come up in the conversation with Tom, no doubt. You'll find those resources at productmasterynow.com/480. And I so much appreciate you listening to this podcast. As you are a listener, you must find it valuable. Please help other product professionals discover this podcast by leaving a review. We've been doing this we're on our ninth year now. This is episode 480, but we still have a lot of product managers to reach. You leaving a review makes it actually easier for people to find it. You can leave a review on your podcast player, at least a lot of podcast players let you do that, or at iTunes or Spotify. Okay, let's get into design thinking. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great.
You have been, leading product development, leading the management of products for a long time, three decades now. And design thinking seems to be a good part of that, at least, probably since it has come about. Why is that one of your primary tools?
Well, I think you kind of mentioned, I think of design thinking as a framework and a set of tools for problem solving. Mm-hmm. So when I think about that, I'm thinking about, well, what is design thinking giving me? What's it helping me to do, to accomplish or to do better? So when I think about that, there's kind of four key things I focus on. One is getting closer to the customer, right? Building that empathy, doing the research, going out and really understanding what are your customers' needs, what are their problems, what are their challenges. So that's one of the key things. Another one is then turning those insights or that research into action. So, and I've worked at a number of firms or companies where, they're pretty good at the research side, but not so good at the turn insights into action side of it. So again, I think some of the tools, the methods in design thinking are really great at taking that research, turning it into something actionable and usable for a team to move forward on. Third thing to me really is helping to drive collaboration. So a lot of the tools and methods in design thinking are bringing teams together, cross-functional teams, engaging them to help solve problems, to interact, to engage. So again, I love that part of it, bringing these different perspectives together. And then the third one really is the idea of experiment and iterate. So a lot of the tools in design thinking are driving that idea of, well, let's generate new ideas, let's create prototypes, sketches, whatever, and then let's take those out in front of customers and then iterate on that. So let's experiment and iterate. So again, those are kind of four key kind of drivers or, benefits that I see getting out of design thinking. So a couple of other, go ahead.
No, thank you for going through a lot of clarity there about getting close to the customer, turning insights into action, driving collaboration. And we, as product people, we know experimenting is very important because we don't want to build something people don't want. We want to experiment, make sure we're building something that is actually useful for them.
Yep. So another part of that I really like is, it's like I said, it's a framework and a set of tools. So, it's a common language, a common framework, common set of tools, common expected deliverables. So when I'm working with teams, we could talk about it the same way. It's a simple framework. Again, the way I look at it, I know Stanford, IDEO, other folks have different frameworks. The one I use is basically discover, analyze, create, and develop. So not rocket science. Do your research. Analyze it, generate ideas, test and refine those ideas. But again, since it's a framework and a set of tools, I can communicate with other folks and get everybody on the same page. Again, kind of we can work together and know, how we're going to work together easily using those tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your framework you like is design, analyze, create, and develop.
Yep.
Again, simple, clear, right? Where we're going. So those are the big steps. Can you just, give us a little description for each one of those to make sure we're on the same page? And then we'll talk more about actually applying this.
Yeah. So the framework, again, discover, analyze, create, and develop, I borrowed that as kind of a modified version of Vijay Kumar's model that he has in the 101 Design Methods book. So we changed that a little bit. But within each of those phases are two steps. So in discover, first one is frame. Let's frame out what you're trying to do. So, and I'm amazed how often I work with different teams that come to me and they're like, got this big project. We don't even know where to start, right? What are we trying to accomplish? So again, can you frame out one, the problem, what you're trying to focus for your customer, but also two, what's your business? How do we frame out what you're trying to do for your business? Is this a $5 million project or a $100 million project? Is this a one-year project or a five-year project, right? So can we frame out what you're trying to accomplish? The second part of discover is then let's go do the research, right? Let's get closer to the customer. Let's, build empathy. Let's understand those customer problems, changes, or challenges, needs that they have out there. So again, do the research. The second part of that, analyze, is quite often where, again, companies skip over that quickly, right? They did the research, customer says they want X, let's go make X. Well, you need to spend that time and analyze to really first interpret it. What did you hear? And I one of the tools I like to use there is to say, well, let's start with the facts. What did they say? What did they do? Right? Let's start there, identify that, and then let's go into interpretation. What did you think that meant? Right? Because sometimes if you jump too quickly to, oh, I think they meant this, you're kind of skipping over what they actually said. So let's start out with the facts, what they say, what they do, then let's go an interpretation on that. And then the second part of analyze is really synthesizing all that information. Can we identify again what are some patterns, what are some frameworks, what are some criteria in there? And then in synthesize, now can we turn that into something actionable for the team? So again, can we turn that into design principles, into journey maps, into personas? And the analyze phase, that's where I really love working with designers. So again, most of my career, I started as an industrial designer. I've spent most of my career working with industrial designers. So to me, that's where designers add a huge amount of value to design thinking, is the ability to synthesize a lot of this information and then create the artifacts that teams use. So again, is it journey maps? Is it, sketches that you're trying to explain where a problem or a user need is? So again, working with designers to help really visualize a lot of that information. So at the end of that analyze phase, what I want to have is a really clear set of criteria or design principles so I know what I'm brainstorming. So again, we've done the research, we've analyzed, we've got a clear set of criteria. Third phase is create. So now we're that's the fun part, right? We're going to start generating ideas, start generating solutions. So the first part of that to me is let's brainstorm. And I think there are good ways, structured ways to do brainstorming. So a couple of the tools I like around that, one is a yes and. So the idea coming out of improv comedy, right? Don't say no, don't say but. How do you keep that idea going? So I help out with a class at the University of Michigan, an integrated product development that brings designers, engineers, and MBA students together. And I always use this yes and exercise with them to get them thinking differently. So the exercise is typically, I'm going to have you create an amusement park ride for teenagers. And I give them a sheet that's got a bunch of stimuli on it of different things kids are doing. But, in 5 minutes, they've generated a whole bunch of different crazy ideas. And I always say, have fun with it. And you can usually tell within a minute or two, they're laughing, they're having fun. And then I always have them read them back afterwards. And, again, just to see how they went from nothing to crazy wild ideas in 5 minutes, get them to open up and go, okay, I see how to use yes and. So that's one of the tools I like to use. Another one we like to use is Creative Matrix. So the idea there in Creative Matrix is, how do we take this big problem and shrink it down to some smaller bite-sized chunks that we can try to solve. So a lot of times what we'll do is identify what are some key problems or opportunity areas, put those across the vertical axis. Then on the horizontal axis, then on the vertical axis, we'll identify what are some potential stimuli. So it could be materials, could be processes, could be all kinds of different types of stimuli. But then you brainstorm within each of those squares. So you got a problem and you've got a stimuli. So again, the point there is, how do we break a big problem into smaller chunks and focus on that a little bit differently? So again, a couple of different tools that I like to use in the create phase. Another part in that phase is then, okay, let's get visual. Let's build something. That's whether it's sketches, renderings, prototypes, right? So let's actually start to make some concepts, build something that we can get in front of people. So that's kind of the create phase. Oh, one more part kind of in that create phase that I really focus on. I started out by saying, you know, the brainstorming, doing the creative matrix, come up with lots of ideas. And I quite often refer to those as idea fragments. So what we want to do then after that is, instead of trying to pick out of those idea fragments, well, that's a good idea, that's a good idea, do an exercise where you now combine them. Come up with bigger concepts. So start to combine 3, 4, 5 of these idea fragments to be a bigger concept. See if you can come up with 8, 10 big ideas by combining these idea fragments. Again, so now you got some big concepts. Again, then start to build some prototypes out of that. And then the fourth phase, so it's discover, analyze, create, and then the fourth one is develop. That's really testing and refining. So taking your ideas back out, getting those in front of customers, getting feedback on those, and then again, iterating through that multiple times. So you kind of cycle back through. You're doing the research again, now analyze it, generate new ideas. So again, cycling through. And okay, just as an example, again, there was a team I worked with at Stryker. They just launched the project last year. So if anybody wants to look it up, it's called Expedition, spelled with an X, not EX, but spelled with an X. Expedition is a stair chair for emergency medical to get people up and down stairs in emergency situations. But that team really embraced design thinking. So every new person that came on the team was trained in design thinking. They applied the tools throughout their process. And what was really great is this idea of iteration. So they would build a prototype. They'd get customers involved. They'd get feedback on it. The team would get together. They would engage, you know, go through the analysis of that. And what was great in that process was it wasn't just like marketing or it wasn't just engineering. It was the whole team would get together, evaluate what they heard from the research, generate new ideas, build the next prototype. They cycled through that many times over that project. And the team will attest at the end that it really helped them out to solve the right problems and come up with a great solution. So again, they got a great video on their website if you want to look up Expedition.
Fantastic. We'll find a link for that as well and put it in the show notes.
All right, cool. So,
yeah, a stair climbing chair to help in emergency situations to get people moved. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, so we have a good framework. And just a mention on framework, we've had a few discussions on this podcast about design thinking in the past, and they're all slightly different flavors, right? And so probably D School at Stanford is best known for great open source free materials to provide. But I enjoyed, and I don't remember which episode or name this is now, but it was one of the designers that was at IDEO for many years. And you know, that's kind of where, I think of design thinking originating, you know, this user-centered approach, and that's where D School really came from. And he said, well, you know, we all have our own kind of take on design thinking, and here's mine. Right? It's like, okay, we're trying to accomplish the same thing, understand the customer's problem, get some insights about that, build some prototypes, iterate quickly with that so we can get a better solution for them, right? So we're doing lots of testing along the way. As you have helped people with this, and I made some notes as you talked about it, where I suspect I might see places that are easier for people to grasp and some places where there might be friction or mistakes made. I would like to hear from you, but you know, you have all the experience with this. What is it that people tend to get right as they're learning design thinking and applying? It's like, okay, these are the big things, and you know, these are things that you need to get right, and that, yeah, people tend to get them right.
Okay. Well, and kind of stepping back a minute, you were just talking about, you know, the person saying take their take on design thinking. That's the way I look at it. It's all these design thinking models, we're all trying to do the same thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So what I've done is I've gone out and looked at everybody's stuff. I've had training at multiple different places. What I do is I steal from the best, or I borrow from the best. Right. So that's the way I look at it, is I'm sharing with everybody. And I love the fact that a lot of other folks are sharing their information out there. So again, to me, there's not one perfect solution. All this stuff, we're all trying to do the same thing, and we're all sharing a lot of the same information using the same tools. So,
So again, what jobs, are people, right? Steal from the best.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. That's okay.
So to the idea of kind of what people are getting right, and the way I'm thinking about this is the companies that I worked with, right? The people I worked with when they were applying that, what were some of the things they got right? I think one is the idea of getting closer to the customer. I think all the companies I worked with, they wanted to do that. I worked with Herman Miller. We were great research-driven company, Stryker. They really want to understand the customer. So I think working in there, the teams, they really want to do that well. They want to get out and they want to understand the customer. Now, again, do they have the right tools to do it really well all the time? That's where I think there's a lot that I could do to help, or that I have been able to help with some of these teams, is help to improve on some of those methods and tools. But I think that desire, that drive to understand the customer has been there with the companies I've worked with, which I think is great. I think this high-level approach, again, I take a simple one: discover, analyze, create, and develop. People get that, right? It's not hard to explain. So when I'm working with different teams, they can look, okay, I understand that method and that approach. Now, I will say, it's funny, I call it a framework. I try not to refer to it as a process, although sometimes I slip into that. And part of that is working with companies, and specifically the last company I was at, they had multiple divisions, and every division had a different new product development process. So if I went to them and said, I've got a new process, or I've got a process you're going to apply, I was going nowhere, right? People were getting scared, leave me alone, that type of stuff. I even had one of the leaders for an advanced concepts team. I was trying to talk to him about design thinking. He came back after a couple of days. He goes, Tom, I had a meeting with my team. 11 out of 12 people on the team don't want any more processes. I said, okay, I get it. It's not a process. This is a framework. So again, the idea that it's a framework, people can understand it, they can get it. And I found too that even when I had skeptics, so I've had people come into my classes before, typically it's an engineer who's like, well, I don't know about this design thinking thing. Once they've gone through the training, once they understand what we're trying to do and how we're trying to apply the tools, people get it. So again, I think the framework, the tools, people understand it, they can apply them. So I think that's great. Another thing that's been, I think, worked really well that I've been very happy about is the participation I've got. So when I engage people in whether they're workshops or they're coming out helping with research or brainstorming, whatever, you know, as long as I can explain to them what we're trying to do, the engagement has been amazing. So again, I came out of Stryker, great people, amazing people that work there. I was always thrilled when I walked out of those sessions. Like, everybody was so engaged, right? I mean, it was awesome. So I think, again, engaging people in that, it's easy to engage people in the methods and the tools. And then the last one is really the idea of collaboration. So that was, again, one of my key drivers. But people want to work that way, right? It's fun. It's more engaging. You know, you got people there. So again, I think that's something that's worked well. People like, you know, doing a lot of the activities, getting up, engaging, you know. So I think that's great. That's worked really well.
Okay. So those are some of the easier things to start in, right? So big picture framework, as I said in the intro, you know, is simple to understand. That doesn't mean it's necessarily easy to implement. And, you know, someone like you who's done this many times have seen lots of different situations, good and bad, and more experience with that. Let's move into what are some of the common things that people get wrong with this.
That's where there's a long list. So it's easy to identify where there are challenges or problems. So, you know, and it's interesting, you've been seeing, or if you've read recently in the last few years, people coming out kind of slamming on design thinking that is not working. I think there was recently even, didn't it come out an article saying the death of design thinking because IDEO had laid off some people there? So again, you know, and it was funny, that got emailed to me right away from a number of people, you know, it's the death of design thinking. But part of that problem is people are looking at design thinking and saying, okay, we're trying to make it really structured and linear process, right? And they're seeing the steps from Stanford, whoever. Oh no, you're trying to take this kind of messy process and you're trying to put too much structure to it. I honestly don't agree with that. You know, when I look at what Stanford or IDEO or even the way I approach it, it's always lots of iteration in there.
Right.
You know, they know it's messy. We're not trying to say it's super structured. But again, if we can add a little bit more common language, common tools, expected deliverables, we are adding a little bit of structure there. But again, I think when I hear people say, you know, they're down on design thinking because it's too much structure, I don't think they understand really how we're trying to use it. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, to me, it's a framework that's very flexible. I can apply a lot of different tools. So to me, it's not that structured. So again, I approach that a little bit differently. I think another common problem, misconception of design thinking is it's all about sticky notes and workshops, right? We're going to cover the wall with cool sticky notes and everybody's going to come in and get crazy. And okay, it's a tool, right? Sticky notes are a tool. That's how we use them. It's to help organize or collect information, right? It's not about the sticky notes. And as somebody who's facilitated many of these workshops, you know, I get the same joke over and over again. Oh, you must have stock in 3M post-it notes, right? So again, people think it's all about sticky notes and brainstorming. So that's another one. I think another one is people, you need to start with the user, right? That's what we're talking about. Understand your customer, understand your user, as opposed to saying, well, I'm going to start with this product widget or the features on this product. Yeah. Or what's worse too for me sometimes when they want to use design thinking, they want to start with the tool. Hey, I want to do a workshop with journey mapping. Okay, what are you trying to accomplish, right? Let's start there. Let's start with the user. Let's start what you want to accomplish first before we jump into whatever your tools are. So again, people jump too fast that way. I think another thing I've heard or seen is people will say, well, design thinking is expensive or it takes a lot of time, right? And especially when I'm teaching the class and I talk about, I got these four phases and I got two steps in each phase, so there's eight steps, people will look at that and go, I ain't got time to do all that stuff. And again, to me, it's a framework and a set of tools. It's flexible. So I just go, well, are you going to do research? I got tools that can help you do that. Are you going to analyze it? I got tools that can help you do that. You don't have to do all these steps, right? Where are you in the process? What tools do you need? What are you trying to accomplish? Right. I got the tools to help you, right? So again, and again, on the idea of, you know, time and expense, again, that project I mentioned, the expedition project, that team would argue that they took time out of the back end of that project because they spent so much time upfront understanding the user and cycling through these iterations on prototypes that when they got to final engineering development, they were baked. I mean, and again, it's a beautiful product. So again, they would say they save time downstream by doing more of that work up front. So,
yeah, they had more clarity about the design up front.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A couple other things to me. So again, I teach these two-day classes around design thinking. I think they're great. People get excited. They walk away wanting to use design thinking, but that's not enough. They need help after that, right? So you can't learn design thinking in a two-day class or go into, you know, IDEO and taking a week-long class. This is a skill set, right? There are people who are really good at this. So if you want to get good at it, you got to spend some time. So if you're going to do it, I would say, you know, initially, probably want to hire somebody to help you do some of these activities. But again, the two-day classes are great. They get people excited. They get them to learn enough to say, I want to apply this and I see where I can apply it. Now I just need some help. So that's another one. And then my last one is, I've never liked the term design thinking. So I remember when it first came out, you know, I mean, it's been around for a long time, but really in like the mid, late 90s is when IDEO and Stanford really started pushing it. And I was working with a professor at the University of Michigan who was out of the business school and the engineering school. And he actually led this integrated product development class that had engineers, designers, and business students together. So he understood the whole process. But I remember talking to him about design thinking. He's like, design thinking? He goes, we've been doing this forever. You know, this isn't new. This isn't the realm of designers own this, right? This is a process and a set of tools and a framework that's been around for a while. So I kind of agree. And I think the term design thinking is polarizing. Right? You get people who love it. Designers are like, yeah, that's us. And you got other people who question it and kind of get concerned. Oh, that kind of sounds crazy, this whole design thinking thing. So I actually prefer, you know, human-centered design, user-centered design, customer-centered design, terms like that to talk about it. Because to me, again, it's about problem solving, right? And so again, I think it's all, you know, depends on how you want to talk about it. But that term, I think, has always pushed people a little bit in the wrong direction. So
yeah, I'm sure you have seen the IDEO video that, I forget the name of the news program at the time that did this on the shopping cart.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah. Oh
so,
yeah.
And this was 80 something, right?
Yeah,
maybe mid late 80s, and that portrayed in 20 minutes such a great picture of design thinking, right? And very cross functional, where you have you have industrial designers, you have people that have very different perspectives, right? The project manager for that is a med student, right? On break now because he loves doing this sort of stuff. You have psychologists thinking about other perspectives, and it's just this cross functional integration to analyze the customer's problem, interact with the customer, right? How do we design a shopping cart? Well, let's go talk to people who use shopping carts. Let's go talk to store managers who have to maintain shopping carts, the maintenance people that have to fix them and all the things. And it was really enlightening. And that was a very early version, right before there was a thing known as design thinking per se, about how this comes together and works. Okay, so I appreciate the list. I want to go back to time a little bit. So you mentioned, you know, in 2 days you can take a class and do this. When you're doing a design thinking workshop for someone, I want to know what this looks like to you. Because I personally have done some workshops for groups, and as little as like half a day, we've done something productive. And norm is probably more like 3 days. And, you know, maybe we're stretching out to five, depending on what's actually going on. And I've always had customers in the room as part of the activity, so we can actually get customer interaction. I want to know what your experience has been for how you actually structure that and how much time is needed.
Okay. Yeah, you're doing longer ones. I typically am doing 1 or 2 day types of workshops with teams. And then from a structure standpoint, I typically follow very similar, this idea of discover, analyze, create, and develop. So at the beginning, I want to immerse the team, whatever the topic is we're talking about, let's immerse everybody in whatever we know about it, right? Do we have existing research already? Do we have information from the users? Let's immerse everybody in that. And then the next activity is let's go through, you know, again, what kind of exercise we have. How do we then pull key insights out of that immersion? Right? What key information do we have? What, you know, key learnings did we have out of that? And, you know, do some exercises to generate that. And then hopefully do some exercises to maybe help prioritize or focus that. So it might be, you know, do affinity diagramming to get some key themes, then maybe do some how might we opportunity statements to turn those into more opportunities. Then in the create phase, now, whatever it is, are we generating solutions around that? Whether that solutions are products, or it might be new processes, or it might be, you know, a new strategy, right? Let's brainstorm. What are some solutions around that? And then again, go through some prioritization types of exercises or activities to narrow that down. And then again, kind of that develop is the test and refine. Again, can we evaluate that as a group? Maybe do a little bit of importance versus difficulty, or some different ways to, again, help refine that down. So I'll use those same four quadrants in the process for a workshop.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. And finding results in, you know, little as 1 to 2 day sort of range, the team applying this. Fantastic.
Yeah.
As you went through and talked about, you know, detailing discovery, analyze, create, develop for us, you said a few things I want to go back to. Because I've seen some mistakes made, and I would love to get your experience on this and just highlight these as well. One was for analyze. You said we really want to hear what the customer says as well as what they do. And the hearing what they say, I have seen sometimes teams take what they heard and translate it into company speak. And we actually lose a lot of goodness when we do that, because we need to stick with what the customer actually says. At least that's what I believe.
Yeah. So I think I've seen that happen before. You know, you're not really listening to the customer. You've already got in your head what you want to hear. And it probably, again, it's something that you've heard in the company. It's something the team's talking about. So when you hear this, you kind of spin it into your own language and go, yeah, that fits with what I'm already thinking about. So, you know, that's again, just adding a bias to it. That's why, again, I like to talk to, like a tool I mentioned, or the method I mentioned, is let's start again. Exactly. What did they say? What did they do? Okay, let's write that down. Let's document it. Now let's interpret that. So we haven't missed out on that initial part of what they actually said and did.
Yeah, we kind of jumped ahead to, you know, clearly we know what they meant. We'll just put it in the language we're used to.
Yeah.
And maybe we miss some very important nuance there. Yeah. And prototypes. I love the prototypes that we're creating, you know, during create stage. We're starting to physically, or maybe sketches, but probably in time, physically forming prototypes of what a solution could look like for this, you know, whatever that is, if it's artifacts for a service or if it's actual physical product or the like. And foam and cardboard and paper and the like, it goes a long ways to creating a fast prototype for things. One thing I've seen a big difference, and I think D-School probably stresses this as well. This is probably where I got it from. If I am the designer as part of the design thinking team, and we take this prototype and you're the customer, and I come and I sit in front of you with this thing, and I show you my prototype, and I tell you how great it is, and you know, and let you look at all this thing, and I never put it into your hands, I'm losing out on your actual experience as you think about this possible solution. What do you think about that?
Yeah. So, you know, coming from a design background myself, I understand what this is like as a designer. You know, you want to show off this thing. You want to show how beautiful and awesome your idea is, you know, and I've even been in the back of focus group rooms where the designer is watching this and listening and getting pissed off because, you know, the person is not telling them how amazing their design is. But again, as a designer and somebody who's led a lot of research, when I plan that out, I plan out what are the activities I want this person to do with this prototype, right? Mm-hmm. I may show it to them and maybe first thing is, what's your first initial impression, right? You haven't touched it yet. You're just looking at it. Give me your impression. Okay, now I want to give it to you and it might be, okay, play with it a little bit. I want to see how you're going to interact with it before I have you do anything. And the third one might be, okay, now I actually want you to do these activities because I want to make sure I see how you use it when you're, you know, doing this and doing that, right? So I can learn from that. So again, I usually think about it in multiple ways. What's that initial reaction? You know, when you, then when you get to touch it, what do you think? And then now I'm going to give you specific activities because I want to know exactly how you use it in those different ways.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, and let them have that experience. And there's something very different when we are commenting on something we're looking at versus actually touching it and having some tactile experience with our brains kind of engage differently and we experience it differently. So, okay, great.
Go ahead. And it's funny. So one of the things I always say, again, when I'm doing my classes and working with different teams is don't go into a room with gray walls, gray carpet, and gray furniture and say, be creative. Or from a research standpoint, say, give me your thoughts, right? How do you immerse people? Even in research, can you put up images of the environment? So again, I came out of healthcare. Can you have images of the OR, of, you know, a patient room, right? Can you have products in there? Can you have, you know, what information can you put around them to immerse them? Again, don't go into this boring room and then go, oh, what do you think, right? Immerse them, stimulate them.
Yep, really good. I appreciate you taking us through the framework. That was real clear about things that people tend to get right, some places that we want to pay attention to not get wrong. And that we can get a lot of benefit in one or two days of applying this methodology and learning how to solve a real problem that our customers have in a way that is meaningful to them. So it's a very important tool or framework, I should be saying, very important framework for us to have as part of our tools that we do use. As listeners know, we do like innovation quotes. I asked you to bring one for us. Can you share that and tell us what it means to you?
Yeah, I have it written down here so I could actually say it because it's a little bit of a long one. So this is from Tim Brown from IDEO. So a quote is, the increasing complexity of products, services, and experiences has replaced the myth of the lone creative genius with the reality of the enthusiastic interdisciplinary collaborator. And I think I pulled that out of his Change by Design book that he wrote a number of years ago. So, and I've been using that quote again for probably 12, 15 years whenever that book came out. And I think part of it goes back to at the time I was at Herman Miller, and Herman Miller has this amazing history, right, of amazing designers, Charles and Ray Eames, George Nelson, right, all these amazing people. And so they love those stories about this genius designer who created these things. And even up to when I was there, that was still basically the mindset is the designer was the genius. Everybody else's job was to help, you know, turn that genius into something. And I was always looking at the teams going, man, it's really about teamwork and collaboration. You know, the best projects that I saw were when they had an amazing team. So yeah, it was an amazing designer, but it had some great engineers and marketing people and they all worked together. So that's where I really started looking at it. And then what I like, I still use it all the time now in my classes. And a big reason is I want people to understand you're important to the process, right? It's not about some genius off to the side who's going to come up with it on your team. No, you're all working together. You're collaborating together. So again, to me, it's a way to tell everyone on the team, you're an important part of this, right? You should be engaged. So that's why I really like that. Again, I've been using that quote for 15 years.
I love the quote, the enthusiastic interdisciplinary collaborator. That is what we need in innovation when we're doing developing products, managing products, making things better. So thanks for sharing that with us. Sure. How can people find out about your work, Tom? Find out about more information you have? Maybe you want to reach out to you?
Yeah, easiest way is probably on LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn, you know, Tom Granzo. You can look me up on there. My company, Granzo Design Strategies, is also on LinkedIn, but there's not a whole lot of information there, to be honest with you. But yeah, I would love to have people contact me. Again, I love talking about design thinking. I love sharing different tools and strategies. So I actually speak at different universities. So I love talking about it. Love to talk to different people.
Fantastic. Tom, really appreciate you being with us, helping to take us through design thinking, understanding some of the details a little bit more clearly, some mistakes that we should avoid, and just great information. So thanks, Tom.
All right. Well, thank you. This was great.
And listeners, as a reminder, if you want to find those detailed show notes and that one-page action guide that we create for you, simply go to productmasterynow.com/480. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.